LP Laguna Niguel, Laguna Beach. Member supported KX93.5. This disclaimer is a statement notifying the listening audience that any opinion expressed on the air is not reflective of KX93.5, its management, or its board of directors.
Good morning, Laguna Beach, Orange County, and to all our friends joining us today. Coming to you from the heart of the village in beautiful Laguna Beach, California, you're listening to Laguna Roundtable with smart talk and bold perspectives. Brought to you by your Laguna Roundtable co-hosts, Jim Kennedy and Dr. Ari Grayson on KX93.5.
Good morning, Laguna. This is Laguna Roundtable, KX93.5, on a wet and chilly May morning. Good morning, folks. We are here this morning. We'll be talking about a number of things. Say hello, Dr. Ari.
Good morning, everybody.
It is wet and chilly out there, is it not?
It is. It's perfect.
It's perfect. Are we going to warm them up with some intelligent political conversation?
Absolutely.
Warming
up for this all week long.
All right. Well, we'll crawl up in front of the fireplace, get your coffee out there, maybe with a little something special to keep you warm inside. Not that we're advocating that, especially if you're going to go out there and be driving. But it is a little cloudy, wet, and blustery this morning. But we will be here to keep you company for the next hour on KX93.5. We're going to be talking about the healthcare vote this week, the James Comey testifying before Congress, a little bit of foreign policy question, little France, little England, little Philippines, and what other country?
North Korea.
North Korea.
Let's not forget the little man up north.
The very little man. Yeah, you know, I saw a picture of him. No, you know, I got one word for one or two words for him. Nutri-Slim or Weight Watchers. Little pudgy. You know, little. I mean, I'm not a guy to talk. But he's looking pretty rotund in some of those outfits that he's in. So
but always styling. The man's really got his finger on the pulse of the world's fashion industry, doesn't he?
I figured he had his finger on the pulse of the nuclear button. But that's about the only thing I figured he had his finger on that I really wanted to discuss at 8 o'clock on a Sunday morning. We'll be talking about some local issues. And then we will talk about the healthcare vote, because that's always a topic that we could probably spend an entire show on talking about healthcare and health insurance. So
it would definitely be good. We need to get some healthcare professionals in here.
Maybe we should host the Laguna Roundtable on healthcare.
I think that would be a good idea.
Solving the healthcare crisis.
I think that would be a good place to start, since the Republicans in Congress aren't doing it.
Yes, thank you very much for that thing. And as you can tell, we have begun. All right, folks. And as we were talking about the top topic of the week in politics in Washington, and probably for many Americans, because this is one of those topics, you know, James Comey going before the House and testifying, okay, if you're a political junkie, it's interesting. But for the average American, that doesn't really affect them, right, Ari? I mean, you know, do any of your friends feel affected? I mean, other than your deep political friends, does the average American, okay, feel, you know, affected by the James Comey speech or testifying before Congress?
I'm not sure that they do in all
honesty. Do they even know that he's probably testifying before Congress?
No, it doesn't seem to have captured any of the headlines, but it is going to have tremendous importance over what happens with this administration in the next year or so.
Right, but the point is, if you bring up health care, that's something that everybody pays attention to.
Very visceral.
Because that affects you. And then it's actually not health care, it's health insurance in many ways. So,
well, very directly, and it's a precious few that actually make the connection between the kind of health care policies that we're going to see in the next couple of years and the outcome of the election, because obviously health care under a Trump administration is very different than the vision of health care under the Affordable Care Act and under what would have been a Clinton administration.
Yeah, well, I'm not so sure that's actually accurate, but we'll get into that a little bit later.
Okay.
But we are talking about the healthcare vote. Republicans passed a repeal to Obamacare, 219, 217, or 218, 215 in the House on Wednesday. And the point is that this affects all Americans. What exactly is the impact today? Nothing. Okay, because go out there and Google Schoolhouse Rock on how to make a bill a law, and you will find that it takes both a vote on the same identical bill between the House and the Senate, which is then signed by the president. What we have right now is a bill that was passed by the House. The bill will now go to the Senate. The Senate has already said that the bill that comes out of the Senate will not be the same as the House bill. which means if they do get a bill that passes the Senate, and that's not a guarantee, that bill will go to what's called conference committee. That means people from the House and the Senate will work out their differences and create a unified bill, which will then go back to the House to be voted on, and then back to the Senate. So if they still got enough people, then it will go to President Trump for signing, which he will probably sign. So, folks, you are not going to be receiving a notice in the week, in the mail this week, telling you that your health care has been canceled, or that your premiums are going to go down by half, or anything like that. So this is not something that's going to happen this week, this month, next month, or probably even by the end of the year. It's going to be something that's going to happen after that as far as affecting you, because there will probably be some sort of a lag period. So, Dr. Ari, what is all of the outrage on the left about considering this truly, in, as for really affecting Americans, has zero effect today?
Well, my bigger question would be, why were the Republicans bussed up to bussed up to the White House for a photo opportunity in this huge celebration if we're only at step one in a multi-step process?
Well, because it is step one, and for Republicans, it's something that Donald Trump ran on. This was one of the main reasons when he said, we're going to get rid of Obamacare. He got one of his biggest cheers right after, we're going to build a wall and we're going to drain the swamp. Probably those are the top three things that Obama got cheers on when it came to was running, and part of the reason why he used to be president of the United States, other than Hillary Clinton was a criminal. But that's a whole different problem.
But those are concepts and applause lines. Those are not actual policies. And right. I think that one of the things that we're going to see in this bill coming out of the United States Congress is, we're going to see this week it's going to be scored by the Congressional Budget Office.
Right. This was an unscored bill, which is probably not really the best way to do it, to be honest.
And so the Republicans were not only getting ahead of themselves and cheering it, but they're getting way ahead of themselves, not knowing exactly how this is going to score out, what the costs are going to be, where the damages are going to be done, what benefits there may be. We don't know that. One thing that we can say for certainty is that Donald Trump has taken his very first step in actually unifying the American people. I have not seen that in the first 100-plus days. You would have thought that considering he did win, obviously, the Electoral College, which is what's necessary to become president, but he lost the popular vote by 3 million individuals. So,
or 4 million illegal aliens in California, whichever one you want to call it.
3 million individuals. But
potato, potato.
Okay. Not quite. Not
that leaves you speechless, Dr. Arnold.
Not exactly potato. More like potato rutabaga. But that's another. That's
potato
another,
spaceship?
That's another. That's another conversation. But he has. But in his first 100-plus days, he's done nothing directly to unify the American people, to try and build on his base of support. But this healthcare bill may just well do that, because patients hate it, doctors hate it, hospitals hate it, and insurance companies apparently seem to hate it. So, how he's going to move forward with this certainly remains to be seen. I think one of the great challenges is going to be, selling this to the American people once we get more information out about it.
Well, I think that anything insurance companies hate, I might actually like, just by general principles.
I agree with you on that, because that's generally my go-to. But I was looking at a list of organizations that are opposed to this Trump Care measure. The AARP, the American Nurses Association, the American Medical Association.
Liberals.
We know physicians are all screaming liberals.
Not even more.
American Hospital Association, the American Psychiatric Association, the American College of Physicians, the American Academy of Pediatrics, and this list is obviously too long because we only have a one-hour show.
Okay.
But are
any of them not liberal groups that are basically donors to the Democratic Party?
I'm not sure where their funding goes, but I would generally not consider most physicians to be on the liberal side of the spectrum.
No, but I think the AMA might be.
I'm not sure that they are, but
That all AMA policies are votes amongst are votes from physician members. I don't think they vote on what policy that the AMA is going to take.
Well, but I think it's a mistake to consider them to be a liberal organization. They're interested in human beings and human health, and if that's the purview of liberals rather than conservatives, then shame on the conservatives
okay,
in this
fine.
Country. Because, healthcare is something which is universal. We should be able to get behind it. And we should find a way to make
healthcare universal. So you're looking for universal healthcare.
I think universal healthcare would certainly, if Donald Trump truly wants to make America great, we should make sure that people aren't bankrupted by healthcare costs, pre-existing conditions, or the very human need of actually needing prophylactic or preventative medicine. So, yeah, I mean, that's part of what makes this country great, or would make this country great, is ensuring that our population is healthy and able to perform up to their capabilities and not be bankrupted by, a major illness.
Okay, well, and we'll continue this in the second half of the hour in more detail in the topic section. Laguna Roundtable, KX93.5. You can reach the radio station at kx935.com. You can reach us at, you can reach me at Righty Jim, and you can reach us via email, lagunaroundtable@gmail.com. All right, let's move on.
And I'm trying to go through the, event anonymously or as discreetly as possible. So if you want to get in touch with me, skywriting is probably the best way to do it.
I will forward all emails from Laguna Roundtable that say, Dr. Ari, you bleep and bleep to you personally. Do not worry.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, and I can only accommodate about 10,000 emails, so.
Well, we will not worry about that number. We will handle all that we receive. All right, next we talk about James Comey testifying to Congress. FBI Director James Comey was brought in to, what was he brought in for? Just to talk about the Hillary flip-flop, or what? I wasn't really sure exactly why at this point they were bringing him in. It's kind of old news at this point, and it was, we're over 100 days, we're over 3 months into the administration. What was exactly the reason for the Republicans bringing him in at this point?
Well, I think that, from what I understand, the purpose of this was to discuss the FBI's handling of the investigation into Hillary Clinton's private email server and James Comey's, the FBI director's
decision. Well, the emails were private. The server wasn't really.
Well, it was, a private email server. I thought I said
okay,
that.
Well,
but,
yeah, okay.
In any case, just 11 days before the November election. But, of course, Director Comey also made the decision not to mention that the Trump campaign team was also being investigated for connections to Russia.
Well, a person that had been on the Trump campaign team had been investigated. I don't think it was the entire team. It wasn't Trump himself. So it was kind of an isolated incident, and which at this point has borne nothing other than just this Democratic speculation. So the Hillary thing was a real security issue. And the fact, okay, here's the thing. The one thing to me that was the most important information that came out of this thing was the reason why he reopened the investigation, like you said, a mere 11 days before, was because of Huma Abedin, Hillary Clinton's number one personal assistant, valet, confidant. She wasn't her chief of staff. Cheryl Mills was the chief of staff at the Senate, but Huma was her Friday.
She was definitely one of her most respected advisors.
Closest confidants.
Yes.
Had emailed 40,000 national security documents. Sorry, 40,000 emails that had security clearance on them to Anthony Weiner, her husband, who is known as, a former congressman, a former candidate of New York, and a guy who likes to text pictures of his male anatomy to women, some of which were not of the legal age of 18. Some of them were, but none of them were his wife. I don't know if she didn't want to see it or what, but he was not sending those to his wife, who basically has less opportunity of holding security clearance than maybe Alger Hiss. If you don't know who Alger Hiss is, go ahead and Google it. So to give you an idea of exactly who should not have been getting secured classified emails. Why is Huma Abedin not in jail? Why has she not been brought up on charges? That's the thing I don't understand out of all this.
I'm not sure whether there was anything in there that was classified that would merit prosecution.
It's classified. That's not how you handle classified information.
I agree.
Emailing them to your husband, even if he is Mr. Weiner. Okay, and that's just, that's just a name that just pays, that just... it's just a self-serving joke. Yeah, I mean, seriously. If you wrote a script and called the guy Mr. Weiner, they send it back and say, seriously, no one's going to believe this. Come on, give me a break. But seriously. And by the way, folks, if you ever want to watch, if you ever had the opportunity, watch the documentary that was done on him when he was running for mayor and when his second and third incidents of texting without a license went out there. It is absolutely first thing that I notice is I have never seen a more unhappy person than Huma Abedin in that movie. She just looks like, you know, either kill me or get me out of here. I just do not want to be here. I especially do not want to be on camera. And I really want to remind myself, why did I marry this man? Because she doesn't, seriously, she looks, I mean, I saw happier people on the Bataan Death March than her. She was seriously unhappy looking at that whole documentary.
No question. And Anthony Weiner is certainly a very bright man and an astute politician. And to do so many profoundly stupid things as he's done, you know.
He was going to be mayor. It was like a 12-man field. And there was nobody that had any name recognition except Weiner. He was 15 points ahead, which doesn't sound like a lot, but he was in that race.
Well, in a multi-person race, that was an enormous
win. He was going to win the primary, and because of New York being New York, if you win the Democratic primary, you are mayor because there really aren't any Republicans. Rudy Giuliani was the only one in the last, 40 years probably that's been run.
Well, Bloomberg, but Bloomberg's more of an independent. He does not fit well with the Republican Party.
No, he doesn't fit well with anybody.
But, going back to the James Comey question,
that's
okay. I think the real problem is that even during the investigation, when it was discovered that Anthony Weiner did have emails that he shouldn't have had access to on his computer, we did not know what that entailed. And it was premature for Comey to say they were reopening up an investigation, but had no idea what kind of information was in that. And to do that just 11 days before a presidential election cast so much doubt over Hillary, and people were so sick of hearing about Hillary and her server and the emails and the potential for, criminal misconduct, that even people that would have supported her just said enough already. And I know a lot of Democrats and independents that really had, it was just the straw that broke the camel's back. So, but why Comey did that but said nothing about the fact that the Trump campaign was under investigation for ties to Russia.
A former staffer on the Trump campaign.
Well, but it's still, whether he was former staffer or not, it still involved dealing with the Russians and potentially compromising national security and our
facts, not an evidence on the side. That's kind of a logical leap. But first of all,
But this was not. It was not released. It was not parallel in what had been done to release this information Hillary's investigation, but not saying anything at all about a Trump investigation. But one of the things.
Well, one was a principal. One wasn't. Trump wasn't investigated. A former staffer on his campaign was being investigated. Hillary Rodham Clinton was being investigated.
Yes.
Not a former staffer on her campaign.
But it's
the relevance of the person of which you are talking about being investigated.
And I won't disagree with you on that, but it's still, when you're looking at somebody who is influencing the outcome of an American election.
I'm not sure they really had
was
any
a former staffer. Well, there's just as much evidence of that as there was of there being inappropriate emails on Anthony Weiner's email service.
Well, but there's also the question of the emails that Hillary deleted, the emails that she forwarded on to her attorney who doesn't have national security clearance, the security of the handling of information in general, putting it on a homebrewed server in your bathroom does not constitute, proper security methods. I work in technology. I do not understand anyone who's ever worked in technology being able to support Hillary because of her handling of classified information, nor do I understand anybody who's worked with her setting up that server, knowing what, if you knew what was going to be on. If you didn't, if you thought that she was going to be using it to surf the internet, okay, well, that's fine. But if you knew that she was putting it up as a mail server, an exchange server, if that's what it was, I'm assuming it was probably a Microsoft Exchange box, that was going to have all of her email that was national security oriented, that's just absolutely ridiculous. And the FBI said earlier that there is a high probability that box was hacked, and probably not hacked by just one foreign intelligence service either. So there was probably, and the thing is too, is if you got to believe the Chinese hacked that box, then probably the Iranians knew it was on that box, and many other countries knew it was on that box. Right. So, it was a national security issue. A former staffer who had talked to the Russians is not a national security issue. It was not they were not investigating if he was passing classified information to the Russians, okay, or if he'd put it, information had been mishandled that was national security oriented or classified materials. So that's the difference. By the way,
well, and absolutely, okay, go ahead. And I do get that, and
sure.
And I cannot defend Hillary Clinton's actions regarding
this. Nobody can. Even Bill.
No, it's indefensible. So, you know, let's be very clear about
that. And she would
that.
Never, ever take – I mean, she did not stand up there. That was part of the thing that's been brought up.
Fully accept responsibility.
Right. She just go, oh, it's somebody else. I mean, Hillary Clinton's never done anything wrong. It is always somebody else's fault.
But to do this without evidence as to what was in those emails that he was going to find and create,
I mean, the emails
again,
that she deleted.
The impression. But to create the impression again 11 days before an election and potentially affect the outcome. Even Comey said during his testimony, and I'll quote him on this, it makes me mildly nauseous to think that we might have had some impact on the election, but honestly, it wouldn't have changed my decision.
To be honest, you know, I mean, and I completely defend Director Comey on that, because the thought of Hillary Clinton makes me more than mildly nauseous.
Well, right now the country is waking up with morning sickness day after day.
Well, I'm really not. And, maybe you need to get a pregnancy test, because I really don't.
Well, you know what? This nation was screwed by James Comey. So, yes, I think the morning sickness.
Facts not in evidence. Facts not in evidence. All right. KX93.5 Laguna Roundtable. If we're still on the air later on, we will be talking.
Well, we haven't gone all Stephen Colbert yet today.
Well, no, we won't, and hopefully we will not. We were talking a little bit more about foreign policy. Let's start off with Dr. Arie was really eager to talk about North Korea and the Philippines. Are those connections, could those countries somehow connected to each other, or was it just happened to be things that were coming up in the people that Donald Trump's willing to talk to? And I find this interesting that Trump is getting lambasted for willing to talk to Duterte, the Philippine president. And he even said he would talk to Kim Jong crazy. And when Bush said he would not talk to foreign leaders like I'm a nut job in Iran, he was blasted. Now Trump says he will talk to them, and he's blasted by the left. Dr. Arie, can you please comment on the consistency of the left and its feelings?
I don't believe that it's a matter of whether or not Mr. Trump should be talking to these leaders, the leaders of the Philippines, the leaders, the leadership of North Korea. I think it's what he has said about these people, and he seems to have this affinity for strongmen, for dictators. I know he likes this authoritarian ability to just do what they want, as Mr. Trump did in the private sector, as the CEO of Trump World. But that's not how...
Is an amusement park now called Trump World?
I'm not amused, but yeah, there probably is. But in any case, when you say something to the effect that it would be an honor to have Kim Jong-un to the White House, I think there's something profoundly wrong with that statement. It may be, we would look forward, we would welcome the opportunity to speak with him and to have frank discussions, but to say that you're honored, I mean, would it be appropriate for George H.W. Bush to have said before the first war in the Persian Gulf to extricate Saddam Hussein from Kuwait, to say that it would be an honor to have Saddam Hussein in the White House? I think inviting a man such as Kim Jong-un and saying it would be an honor to have him, I think that's profoundly wrong, and it sends the wrong message. It gives him status that the man is not deserving.
He's legitimately elected, selected,
No, he's heir apparent. There's nothing legitimate. There's nothing legitimate about him.
He's not a coup leader. He didn't inappropriately. He is the de facto, okay? And that's a legal term for international diplomacy. He's the de facto leader of North Korea. There is no question about that. Okay, so he didn't take power inappropriately. He took power as part of whatever process the North Korean government, as the status that it's in, gave him the power to become the head of the party and the head of the country. There is no question on that. Now, I'm not saying he's a good guy. I'm not saying he's a guy I want to go play basketball with. But first of all, I'm actually marginally upset about this, not because he said he would be honored, but because he would actually invite him to the White House. He doesn't deserve to be to the White House. You mean I would meet him on Malta or something, on some remote island or something. But I certainly would not bring him to America unless we had plans to whack him or something.
And not give
but
him.
But outside of that.
Yeah, that would not cause any.
Yeah, I watched West Wing too, so go ahead. Don't worry about it.
But I agree, to meet in a neutral place, but to give him the optics of being at the White House and shaking
to me, that's hand. To me, that's far worse than calling it, than saying I would be honored to meet with him. He is a head of state. We're not like Obama anymore. We just don't bow to all foreign powers whenever they show up. So, you know, whether it be the Japanese prime minister or the Saudi royal or the king of the House of Saud. We don't bow to people anymore. But to say, you know, I think Trump's trying to be presidential. And I don't really have a problem with that. I don't want him in America. I don't want him in the White House. But I think Trump, you know, if Trump said he would you be upset if he said he would be honored to meet with whichever current nut job is running Iran right now? Would you be upset by that?
Yeah, it would bother me. Yes.
Okay.
It would
bother
it would
Well, at least you're consistent.
It would bother me because it's not an honor to meet with these people. It would.
No, I agree. These are not people that I want to break bread with personally.
Right.
But they are legally de facto heads of their country. They're not like, you know, a coup leader who has taken over some country, some African general who has taken over the country because he's killed the elected government of his country. That's not, you know, a de facto leader. So, I mean, these people are the entitled legal rulers of these countries. They're not. They may not be honorable people, but they are legally in the office of which they hold. So that part of it isn't really in question.
But there's a profound difference between saying that I am honored to meet a Kim Jong-un and saying I would welcome the opportunity or I would be pleased to meet with him.
Sure,
I don't think it's not an honor to meet with a person of this sort, just as it's not an honor to meet with the president of the Philippines who's been in office for less than 1 year and has killed over 7,000 people and admittedly has done so. He's proud of his actions. So, you know, here again, you know, we don't need to be conveying any more stature to some of the world's most vile human beings than is absolutely necessary. We don't need to give them the opportunity to stand on the bodies of those they've killed or those whom they've oppressed and make them into something more grandiose than they are by standing there with the leader of the free world in one of the most recognized buildings in the world, the United States White House, and pretend that somehow, you know, this is a meeting of the world's great leaders. These are not a meeting of the world's great leaders. This is a meeting between the leader of the free world and some of the most vile dictators on God's green earth. So that's where I would differentiate. And words do matter. And I think that's something that this president has yet to fully recognize and accept, is that words convey importance, they have meaning, and they separate us. That's why it's so important for the leader of the United States to always condemn the actions of people such as this.
Right, but yes, and okay, but I mean, I think we're really arguing more semantics than anything else. I don't.
No question about it, but okay. The semantics have meaning to them.
To a point, you're maybe putting a little too much meaning on them, but yes, I do not think that Trump thinks that they are, that Kim, the Kim family is an honorable group of rulers. Okay, they're obviously brutal savages, and they have been for all 75 years that they've ruled North Korea,
right,
from the end of World War II and the early 50s on. So yeah, I mean, I don't think that's a question. You guys
this question: if the opportunity arose to have a face-to-face meeting with Bashar al-Assad, the murderous leader of Syria, would it be appropriate to say it would be the president would be honored to meet with Bashar al-Assad?
If he does it somewhere that's not in the White House, yeah. I mean, again, the semantics of saying he's honored to meet him, I'm basically, to me, it's more he's talking about he's honored to meet with the ruling person of another foreign country. He's not if he said, look, I'm willing to meet with the current ruler of that piece of crud country, Syria. Would you prefer that? I mean, you know, if Trump doesn't say that he's honorable, then everyone's going to say that he's, you know, American, you know, elitism, and he's talking down to somebody. So it's like, you know, I don't think he's going to be able to win with your party right now, regardless of what he says. You're going to try to nitpick anything that Trump pretty much says, because you guys pretty much analyze every word that comes out of his mouth or comes off of a tweeter machine and pretty much try to dissect it for fourth and fifth ulterior meanings. And here's what it really means. It's really a secret code to the alt-right to begin the mobilization of the white supreme nation takeover, some crazy stuff like that.
And I'm not a conspiratist, so I try not to pick apart every word, but you also have to recognize that what you say influences world perceptions. And so it's very important to be careful about about how you address these kind of issues.
Sure. No problem.
Just to remind our listeners, you're tuned to KX93.5, and you're listening to Laguna Roundtable with
Righty Jim
and Dr. Ari Grayson.
Okay, we're going to talk real shortly and quickly about a little bit more foreign influences, the British and French elections. The British are having their national election coming up in about 3 weeks, but they have held their local elections, which are at a different time than the national election. And remember, Britain is a parliamentary system where you have a formal group of local councils that run cities and towns, and you have elected leaders to that, and then you have your members of parliament. So the members of parliament and the prime minister, therefore, will be chosen in about 3 weeks in an election. The British local elections were this week, where they chose their town councils, and they are, unlike a lot of American town councils, I think, are like Laguna, they're nonpartisan offices. That does not occur in England. They are all partisan offices. You all are members, and you basically are kind of like you bring yourself up through this system where you sit on a town council, then you sit as a member of parliament. I mean, you run for that, then you run for that. It's kind of like the pecking order, like for lack of a better phrase, the minor leagues. And the reason I bring it up was this was a sweep, not really a sweep, but this was a real wave election for the Conservative Party. They now hold 28 councils that have a controlling interest. Many of these councils don't have controlling. They're split amongst five or six different parties. And that's, to give an idea, that's out of a total of 38 councils across England in its larger cities that are ruled by anybody. 28 of them are ruled by the Conservative Party. 9 are ruled by the Labour Party. 1 is ruled by a local Welsh party in Wales. For the number of seats that are out there, they hold right now 1,900 seats, and that's a gain of 563 seats. So basically, it's a real wave election. The Labour lost 382 seats, and they're only holding 1,152 right now. So that's a huge wave election for the Conservatives. Obviously, it bodes well for Theresa Miller's election or re-election in about 3 weeks. Dr. Ari, what's happened to the state of Labour in England?
Well, I think much like we've seen here in the United States, the strength of the labor movement has certainly decreased over the last generation. So,
Labor, just for those, is basically the Democratic Party equivalent. It's the Liberal Party of England.
Definitely the more progressive party in the United Kingdom. But that's coming up in a couple of weeks. Today we have the election for the French, and the big news coming out of France on Friday was the election had been hacked by our friends, the Russians.
Well, we don't know that, but we probably know that.
Yeah, it appears from what I'm hearing at this now, early stage that the same people who had hacked the United States election and tried to influence the outcome here
the same group of people allegedly who was able to send an email to John Podesta saying, "Hey, John, what's your email?" And he sent it back to them. That were able to get into the Democratic National Committee's email system. Okay, they did not hack the election. Okay, how many voting machines were hacked?
No.
How many votes were changed?
They tried to influence, and you're right, because as I said earlier, words do matter.
Yes, thank you.
So yes, they tried to influence the election by hacking into emails and releasing information. And that's what we're hearing from France at this point. But one of the more fascinating things that I learned about the French election and came to bear this week is that the French actually go into a blackout period in the days just before the election, not to be confused with a blackout period here in the American election where we wanted to drink so much we just passed out. But
to me, the most interesting or odd fact is Macron, who is considered to be the conservative or the more centralist conservative of the two, and Marine Le Pen, who is considered to be the the person who's the more between the two, I guess he's the more liberal, excuse me, of the two, not the most conservative. She is far more conservative than he is.
Very
he is
much the nationalist, anti-immigrant Le Pen.
Probably pro-legal immigration person. Yes, Le Pen is.
No, even that she wants to cut down dramatically.
Right.
I was reading this morning she wants to cut down immigration to 10,000 people a year.
But I think her point was that if there is any immigration, it should only be legal immigration. Sorry, they are not a supporter of illegal immigration. You are correct. Sorry, I did not phrase that right.
No, that's okay.
Is Macron married his high school teacher? I just think that's really, really creepy.
It seems quintessentially French to me.
Maybe it is. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe that is very French of him. I don't know. I just thought it was really, really creepy. I mean, if he wants to, you know, it's not that she's older than him, it's just that it's his teacher. That's just, you know, I don't know. Maybe in a country where mistresses are highly
prized.
Prized might be a word. Yeah, so. But early turnout is low, which would probably boast well for Le Pen, but she's probably last polls 8 or 9 points down from the last that I've seen.
Yeah.
So it's still going to have to be quite a rally for her. I read an interesting article yesterday about exactly the meaning, you know, low turnout would be favorable to her because it would mean that probably the liberals are not coming out and Macron's going to need the liberals to basically offset the votes that she will collect from the right and the far right to win this. And, you know, it'll be very interesting to see what, you know, I mean, this is really going to be a bellwether for Europe as far as where are they, you know. I mean, they brought this upon themselves, bringing in so many Syrian immigrants, so many Syrian refugees that have basically. And the French has had a longstanding problem, though, because of their former colonization. Algerians and Moroccans, I believe, all have free access to England. It's like they are, in effect, de facto citizens. They don't need special entry. They can basically just hop on a boat and land in Marseille or Dijon or whatever, or, you know, or get somewhere they can take high-speed rail in. And they are allowed to stay in England, or they're allowed to stay in France. And I believe they may even get a stipend from the government for it. So, and the problem is a lot of these North African immigrants are Muslim, and they are not assimilating. They're all staying in their own little areas.
That's the big problem. And we saw this a couple of years ago with the labor strikes in France.
The
people, even, you know, second generation from Muslim countries or of origin.
Algeria mostly, but some of them Moroccan too.
But certainly family descent. And we have some friends who have French citizenship who were from Lebanon who during the, Lebanese Civil War, because of former French control over Lebanon and actually Syria as well, they were able to easily gain or obtain full French citizenship, born and raised there. The problem that the French people have is that, unlike what we've tried to do here in the United States, and you alluded to this, Jim, was they don't assimilate well.
Right.
So people who are of descent of individuals who come from Muslim countries, even though they're French educated, they're French born, they're, you know, 25 years old,
right,
and they're looking for jobs,
being Algerian,
they have more than twice the unemployment rate of other French citizens, and that's a real problem. So what we're seeing is kind of this insidious discrimination, even though by French law you're either French or you're not French. There's no distinction as to your nation of or family history of origin,
correct,
which is, which I think is good to a very large degree. There's still this stigmatism that's attached to immigrants in France, and we're seeing this affecting them economically, their ability to succeed and to thrive and to fully become a functioning member of French society, and they're resentful of that. And so we've seen a lot of pushback of that over the years.
Correct. And they're basically, yes. And then there are a lot of them that are there that believe that they are entitled to a government stipend and a government handout. And that angers a lot of the French that are there make their own way. And do not really know. French does have a marginally socialist system. They only work, I think they're down to 37 and a half hour work week now. I think they only have to work 7.5 hours a day. They get 6 weeks off a year, so they're very very high in benefits and work. So
and the immigrant population, you know, a generation or two in, would not need social support if they were being provided access to economic opportunity that would help them thrive. And so by isolating these communities from the bigger slice of the economic pie, France has created these tremendous problems for themselves. And one of the things, and we see it even here in California, people make these mistakes, and I've said this often in my consulting with my wife, is, you know, we have tremendous diversity here in California, and there's tremendous diversity in a nation like France. But there's a difference between diversity and inclusion. So when you have the diversity, but people don't have access to economic success, the economic ladder, that's where you're starting to create these tensions and these social problems that we've seen in France. And we need to be careful here in the United States we don't fall into that same trap as well.
All right, Laguna Roundtable, KX93.5. We'll take a short musical break, and we'll be back. We'll talk about healthcare. And everybody, have a good listen here. Only happy when it rains by garbage on a rainy Sunday morning.
I'm only happy when it rains. I'm only happy when it's complicated. And though I know you can't appreciate it, I'm only happy when it rains. You know I love it when the news is bad. But why it feels so good to feel so sad. I'm only happy when it rains.
Laguna Roundtable, KX935. We are back. They like the rain, but we don't. So one of the things, though, that does keep us on the air, we are a community-supported station that's able to put fine programming like Laguna Roundtable. And coming up next, I'm looking at Jason Fetty as he prepares for his show over there in our warm-up studios, is interaction with our Laguna Beach public. And we will have that opportunity again, K-Exclusive, 2017 is coming up, Montage Laguna Beach Grand Lawn, June 16th, 2017. VIP reception starts at 5. The event starts at 6. For more information, we're going to have, or by the way, we're going to have the Led Zeppelin again, most accurate, authentic representation of Led Zeppelin in the world today. I wonder, is that something that actually, like, can you win awards for being, like, the best Led Zeppelin tribute band, I wonder?
They probably do have competitions, just like they have the best Elvis impersonator.
There you go, yeah. There you go. That would probably be done in Las Vegas.
But actually, speaking of Led Zeppelin, the Doheny Blues Festival in 2 weeks, John Bonham's son, Jason Bonham, mm-hmm. is going to be performing at the festival with the Led Zeppelin Experience. And about, I think, 3 years ago, if you saw the Kennedy Center honors with when they were honoring Led Zeppelin, Jason Bonham was playing the drums with Anna
drums,
Nancy
yeah.
Wilson.
Oh, interesting.
Absolutely phenomenal, phenomenal rendition of Stairway to Heaven.
Oh,
so that'll
cool.
be a great event.
So the K-Exclusive 2017, the event will be emceed by comedy legend Rita Rudner. Opening the night will be OC artist 92629 and Nick Brodeur. For more information, contact KX935 or via the website KX935.com. All right, we like letting you know about those because those are the type of events that allow us to stay on the air and do this fine programming on Sunday morning for you folks.
And, actually, speaking of local news and local going on.
Oh, yes, go ahead.
On Tuesday, May 9th, it's going to mark the month. There's a proclamation coming out on May 9th, which is in 2 days, marking the month of June as the LGBT Heritage and Cultural Month in perpetuity. So, that's exciting for our community. We're paying tribute to our very progressive heritage and history here in Laguna Beach.
Yeah. So what month is straight month?
The other 11 months of the year.
Okay. I don't remember the proclamation on that, but okay. All right. We're going to talk about healthcare for the remaining 11 or 12 minutes that we have this morning. Actually, it'll be more like, 12 minutes or so that we've got.
Right.
So, okay. One of the things that I always want to bring up on these issues, or bring up, especially on the healthcare one, this is one that I've actually written, by the way. If you go to we have a blog that we write that we don't ever talk about. LagunaRoundtable.wordpress.com. You can go out there. We post stuff out there every once in a while. But I've posted out there a very interesting article on healthcare because this has been a topic that's obviously been going on for at least 7 years if you've been following the Obamacare debate, and probably longer if you just followed the concept of, the concept and the issues with healthcare at all. But over the last decade, it's become more and more important and more relevant because of the cost of healthcare and the insurance costs have been going up astronomically, much, much higher than the rate of inflation has been going up. And like I said, it's an issue that I'm interested in because it affects all Americans. It's 1/6 the economy. So go out there to lagunaroundtable.wordpress.com and read my blog article on how to fix the healthcare system. And more importantly, the point that I'm trying to get to is this is about health insurance. This is not about health care.
Right.
Nothing that changes will allow you, you're not being taken away your right to go get an MRI. You're just, what may happen is how that MRI is paid for is what's involved with this. And none of this covers health costs, health care costs.
Right.
It only deals with the health insurance. Obamacare didn't do one thing. It was called the Affordable Care Act. But frankly, it made healthcare no more affordable than it was previously. And in fact, it's made it more unaffordable for many people because of the rules and regulations that are involved in it. So Dr. Ari, what do we do in this country to actually address the cost of healthcare directly rather than just the cost of health insurance?
I think one of the most important steps we need to do is go to the Bernie Sanders model of having full universal healthcare for everybody. So that, we're not going through the insurance companies. We have a single payer system. And, we certainly need to recognize that having
how does that control
access,
costs?
Access to health care is not the same as having affordable health care. Well, first of all, we have
No. I think a better point would be having health insurance doesn't mean you have access to health care.
Correct.
Because if you have health insurance, you're a guy in Iowa who makes $42,000 a year. You got two kids and a wife. Your policy is $900. You're getting a $600 a month subsidy from the government. You're paying $300 a month out of your own pocket. And then you've also got an $11,000 deductible. That does not provide you access to health care.
Not at all.
That doesn't provide you the right to cough up $300 a month to an insurance company to say that, oh, okay, fine. If you really ever do have some sort of catastrophe in the family, we will be able to cover some of it by remortgaging the house or by getting a loan from a family member, because we don't have $11,000 to pay our deductible, because that's not a practical amount.
Right.
But go ahead.
No, and you know, we definitely, we've got to get this figured out. Every civilized nation in the world, every first world nation in the world has health care for their citizens, and we need to find a way to make it affordable here in the United States as well.
Okay, here's a question for you. Actually, okay. we didn't cover the cost. We're going to go back into that. Is health care a right?
I think it's a basic human right. Yes.
Expound.
A person should not be denied coverage or have.
Okay, but coverage, but again, coverage isn't health care.
Well,
you can be denied coverage, you still walk in and get a procedure.
But we should, you know, preventative care, pregnancy screening, prenatal care, birth control, all of these things need to be addressed so that we do have our meds affordable. People should not have to decide between purchasing a medication that they need to control
contrary to their
diabetes or any number of conditions, and putting food on their table.
Okay.
And that's one of the real challenges here in the United
right.
States. Why does medicine cost the same pharmaceuticals cost a fraction of the amount it does here in the United States in nations like Canada?
That's product liability. That's what that is. You're basically paying for the insurance of what it costs them to pay for any future lawsuits, because some guy chokes on a pill and sues for $12 million, and some jury that John Edwards finds is deciding that he deserves $12 million. That's part of the problem there. But the better question is that you didn't get to is, why is if I walk in and say, hi, I've got Blue Cross, I need an MRI, is it $400? Hi, I need an MRI and I don't have any insurance, it's $1,200. Or hi, I have cash and need an MRI, it's $900. That MRI machine is the same price, it costs the same amount to run it each time. But why is the insurance company paying $500 and you're paying $300 out of your pocket, versus the guy that doesn't have insurance is paying $1,200 versus and can't pay for it, needs payments, right, versus the guy who's got $600 in cash and it becomes $600. Why is that happening? That's price discrimination. Why do we not know the price for procedures? Why do we not have a control over what those things cost? As far as, I don't want to basically get rid of a free market, but the problem within a free market is competition. And also closer to perfect information, meaning you know what it costs. I mean, you don't know what an MRI costs till you walk in there. Does anyone say MRI is $1,299? Does anyone advertise what their MRIs cost? No, nobody advertises.
Right.
What is a heart? What is a bypass procedure cost? Nobody knows. You get the bill. Why are these things not? Why can I not walk in and not only know what the bypass procedure will cost? I also want to know the success rate of every one of the local hospitals that offers that procedure. How many people die in your hospital from that procedure? How many bad outcomes do you have from that procedure in your hospital?
Right.
Okay, those types of things. There's nothing that prevents us from floating that information. And if you want to have a more competitive marketplace, you need more information. The lack of information is what prevents competition. And that's one of the things, I'm not saying that's going to solve the problem in America, but it would do something to bring down the cost of healthcare. None of the insurance companies simply don't do anything to bring down the cost, because basically they add in their margin and then they just put that on top of it. So they don't really care as long as they're covering their costs on the insurance. If they don't, they'll raise the deductible to $12,000 or they'll raise their health insurance costs.
Right.
They have no incentive to make it cheaper. Information does. If you're paying for it yourself, then you've got an incentive to make it cheaper.
Absolutely. I agree with you on almost everything that you said there. So that's a scary proposition for me on an early Sunday morning.
No, it just means you've actually woken up and are actually, you know, just accepting the reality of which there is.
Well, but, you know. And
the problem is not many in your party are willing to do that. And that's part of the problem.
Well, but that little bit of agreement aside, you know, one of the things that we're seeing now.
Well, you really want to disassociate yourself from that agreement, do you?
Well, I'm trying, Jim.
Wow.
I really am. But no, you know, but that bit of kidding aside. You know, one of the problems that we're seeing with the healthcare bill that is being put forth by our Congress now.
And the health insurance bill would be a more accurate description of it.
It is, you know, putting people in high-risk pools.
Yes.
So that if you have a pre-existing condition, if you have, you know, as I say, you know, whether it's diabetes or asthma or
heart
cancer
disease or
heart
whatever.
Disease or right. whatever it might be, to be put in a high-risk pool, you know, one of the things that we need to recognize is that, you know, as organic biological beings, we're all in a high-risk pool. We need to have one cost for, if we're going to have to go through insurance, we should have one fixed cost for everybody.
And but that the problem way, is not everybody's going to cost the insurance company the same amount.
Of course not.
Just like if you drive like a maniac and get four DUIs, your health, your car insurance is most drastically different than the guy who never has a ticket and has never had a problem.
The problem is, and I don't disagree entirely with that analogy, but I don't think that it's fully accurate in this case because
sure
pre-existing conditions are not necessarily, and in many, many cases, are not due to an individual behavior. It's a genetic predisposition.
Some of them are, some of them aren't. Absolutely.
Absolutely. You know, for example, I won't get into that because people can argue certainly that alcoholism, there's certainly a propensity towards
right.
Alcoholism.
We do not yet know if that is a genetic defect or genetic issue.
Right.
But there are very specifically at this point tagged genetic issues that will make you a preponderance for certain diseases or for certain cancers. And that's a fairly provable scientific fact. That's not just a lefty speculation.
Well, but we do look at things that certainly are genetic or environmentally triggered. So, for example,
sure.
Parkinson's disease, which we know Michael J. Fox has been suffering from
yes.
for many years. He may have a genetic predisposition or towards developing Parkinson's disease, but there are also environmental triggers that cause that to manifest. So the fact that he grew up in Canada in a coal mining community, that could have been a trigger, especially for somebody who played hockey on some of the frozen ponds that form over, you know, mined.
So hockey causes Parkinson's?
Exposure to the teratogens, the toxins that are in coal, could have been environmental triggers, which caused his Parkinson's disease.
Okay.
So that's, you know, there's a genetic predisposition, but there's also environmental factors that cause that to trigger.
Okay, folks, we're going to wrap up our healthcare discussion on that. This is one that we've constantly say we're coming back to, and of course we will be back to it a number of times as this bill wanders through the Senate and the conference committees and maybe not through the conference committees and the Senate. We'll see what happens. All right.
It's like herpes simplex. It keeps coming back.
Okay, on that note, Laguna Roundtable, KX93.5, with your host, Righty Jim and
Dr. Ari Grayson.
We'll be signing off. We'll be back next week for more lovely political discussion. Coming up next, everyone's favorite, Jason Fetty with Full English Breakfast. We are filled with dogs, and Miss Pickles is a bully. We are back next week.
Buckets of rain, buckets of tears, got all them buckets coming out of my ears, buckets of moonbeams in my hand. You got all the love, honey, baby, I can stand. Hard like an oak. I've seen pretty people disappear like smoke. Friends will arrive, friends will disappear. If you want me, honey, baby, I'll be here. Fingertips. I like the way that you move your hips. I like the cool way you look at me. Everything about you is bringing me misery. Little red wagon, little red bike. I ain't no monkey, but I know what I like. I like the way you love me strong and slow. I'm taking you with me, honey, baby, when I go. Life is sad, life is a bust. All you can do is do what you must. You do what you must do, and you do it well. I do it for you, honey, baby, can't you tell?